are live.
What are we drinking today, Emily?
So today we have a bit of a random mix, very impromptu aromatic selection.
Right.
Three white wines.
So let's just get right into it. Like, what constitutes, I mean, I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but what constitutes an aromatic?
So a wine that has lots of aroma, a lot of smell. So think about it like music with a lot of sound.
All right, I like it. I think if you're like not super into wine, aromatics are a really great way to start identifying what like what you're smelling.
I think someone who's a Gewürztraminer drinker might definitely think that.
Because you know how much I love a Gewürztraminer.
Yeah. Gwen is guilty of Gewürztraminer.
I love an aromatic, what can I say?
And it's funny because actually I think, you know, if we were sort of going deep into this, we should have Gewürztraminer here in the lineup. And we should have Sauvignon Blanc, but we don't today.
I remember the first time that I was drinking a fair amount of Viognier, or when I discovered Viognier. One of the things I thought about it is I didn't necessarily think of it as a super perfumed wine or like aromatic. I actually always thought of it as being really saline, because most of the ones that I was having had a really like saltiness about them.
They're definitely sort of mineral, fresher, pure elements of Viognier. Very interesting because we recorded with Hendrik Thomar from Vietnam Limit, who's a master sommelier. And I loved what he said to you, Gwen. He said, Gewürztraminer is for hedonists. And you deal with your own demons. I love that. I love the way he said it because it was very kind but very real at the same time.
Yeah, but I think it's true. If you like opulence.
Yeah, and I actually think Viognier has a similarity in that trait in terms of when it's overripe, it can be high alcohol, can be quite flabby, can be quite broad. And these aromatics become very overblown, and it is quite a hedonistic wine. It's very blossomy, perfumed, and then you've got.
But I think that's exactly what
apricots.
What brought me to wine in general was perfume. So of course I love aromatics.
Yeah.
If you like perfume, if this is something that attracts you to wine, then these are the wines for you.
I'm drawn in, obviously, by the aroma of wine and what I'm smelling, what triggers, and the aromas and the little intricacies.
Nuances, yeah.
The wines that I'm drawn to are very different to yours. And that's what I love about tasting wine with you, because I love Nebbiolo, which is an aromatic.
Oh, I love Nebbiolo too, though, but we haven't done a lot of red episodes, so you haven't experienced that with me yet. Actually, with the reds that I love, the reds that I first loved were things like Nebbiolo, because they are so perfumed. Shiraz, Nebbiolo, all these sort of like rich, deep, complex smells that are sometimes perfumed. But also earthy, they mix the two together.
With the contrast between the sweet and the sour.
That's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, totally.
Otherwise it's one note and then it's boring. Then it could be like a Playboy scent off the shelf rather than something a bit more expensive and interesting.
But Nebbiolo and then Gewürztraminer. We'll have to do Nebbiolo versus Gewürztraminer.
I don't know if that's a fair fight.
Has anybody ever done that? Because we're going to have to do that.
I feel like that's like a fight between like shark versus like bear.
It's like lightweight versus heavyweight.
These are like, all right, we might have to try it.
Gewürztraminer will be lightweight, let's be honest. Where are we starting today, Gwen?
So I think the way we lined it up, I think the bottles are not in order, because I think we decided that we would start with Muscat Love.
I think that's where we should start.
I actually love this label too.
Because it looks like a record.
Yeah. And Muscat Love, of course, is like playing homage to Radar Love.
Yeah.
So really lovely label. It looks, it's got, I mean, it's hard to tell if it's just cold or if it's cloudy, but...
No, it is cloudy. It's unfiltered.
It looks lovely.
Yeah. So Gwen's just pouring it in the glass here, and we can see that there are more bubbles at the edge than there would be usually, because I thought this was going to be a bit of a Pet Nat style, but it's not.
Oh, it's not really.
It's 100% Muscat from Fouts in Germany, from Leine.
This is going to be the smell and noise episode. We're going to do like experimental sounds.
Yeah.
We've got the dog singing under the table. This is very, very aromatic.
Yeah. And do you know what? I think actually this is an interesting one to talk about. Muscat. So Muscat, the grape variety, or Muscat, is a grape variety that most people have tried. Maybe not in this style, though. They might have tried it in its sparkling form or its sweet form. And it's definitely a grape variety that appeals to a lot of people because it's very grapey, actually.
It does have a grapey smell.
You know, sometimes this sort of elderflower, floral, sort of pear, peachy flavours.
Yeah.
And some citrus, definitely there.
Oh, it smells amazing. You know, it's funny though, when you were saying earlier about sweet and sour, because I think this is exactly what this is. And yes. I think this would be very delicious with Chinese food.
Even Japanese food maybe as well.
It's really, like when I smell it now, it's really sweet and sour.
Delicious.
Let me rephrase that. What I find interesting about this style of wine and mm-hmm. what I find interesting about this particular wine. So Muscat, we know to make some of the most famous sweet wines in the world. So what are those wines that we know from Muscat?
Oh God, don't put me on them.
So Muscat de Rivesaltes, we know, fortified dessert wine from the south of France.
That one I know.
Low alcohol, sweet, fruity.
Kind of one of our entry level sparklings.
And I can imagine that at a Gwen barbecue.
Is that a baby sham? Is that made of muscat? I can't remember what baby sham is made of. Because I think a lot of people do get two grapes confused, correct?
Muscadet.
Yes, so that's the one that's not related.
So there's Muscadet, which is coming from the Loire, which is a dry, fresh, high acidity wine, which is usually made in a very dry style. It's very rare to see. I don't know if it's in a sweet style, but it's made with a grape variety called Melon de Bourgogne.
Exactly, Melon de Bourgogne. Yeah. This is not to be confused, because I think that does get confused a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually.
So this one, I think, actually a little bit out of fashion these days, like its lovely cousin Gewürztraminer. Mm-hmm. In terms of like 80s style, but I think this
out
one is
out of fashion with the masses, but this is in fashion with the trade.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I think actually the more I'm drinking it now, a little more interesting it becomes as it hits the air a little bit. It's getting a little fresher and it's getting a little more sour.
Yeah, more of this sort of almost grapefruit pith.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 12% alcohol, so relatively low for a white wine, and not that I want to make a thing about alcohol.
No, but it's interesting to chat about what that means.
But for a low alcohol wine to have a nice amount of flavour, I think that makes it quite interesting.
It's very nice. It's really sweet and sour pork to me.
That's interesting because I've never thought about dry muscat with that. But actually, I think you're on the money. It might sound like a little bit careful. What about craft beer or unfiltered beer?
This is oh my God. You know, I do have a very interesting Polish craft beer in the fridge right now. That's a pineapple beer.
It'd be
beer.
Interesting to compare this hold up. From a food pairing point of view.
If there's similarities.
It's not just because it's unfiltered. Because when we look at the wine, obviously it's cloudy.
But mildly.
But I love that there's this, you know, sometimes us sommeliers, we criticise muscat when it's made in a certain way because it can have this bitterness.
Right.
But I quite like about this wine.
I like the balance
that it's fruity,
of things.
It's aromatic.
But floral, it still has a bite. Yeah.
And it's got this little bitter sort little of yeastiness, bite. Which you get with craft beer.
Yeah, totally.
So I actually quite like the wine from that point of view. So I was wondering, you know, if we should think about it more of a pairing point of view, like a beer.
Yeah, totally. I actually do think that actually makes a lot of sense. And recently there was a bar convent here in Berlin, and normally I would probably avoid the entire beer section, but because I was with a friend that really loves beers, I went along and found a lot of very interesting beers from lots of places that I would put on par with a lot of natural wines that I love to drink.
Just on the point that you said before about it being out of trend,
mm-hmm.
and I said maybe out of trend with the masses, in the last 50 years, it wasn't so common to produce muscat as a dry style of wine. It was very common to see it as a sparkling or a sweet style of wine. But I would say 5 to 8, maybe 10 years maximum, we've started to see these styles of muscat be made in different ways, out of the norm. So not being a sweet wine, being a fortified wine.
I'm really enjoying this. And I think, to be honest, it's probably not something I would have picked up, even though I love an aromatic. I probably wouldn't have picked this up, to be honest.
Even with the label?
The label is really
nice. I only say that because I know that sounds so stupid to say, but
no, but I think it is actually
makes it a bit cool.
It
makes a huge difference. Yeah.
Totally. Because, I mean, where did you get this one?
I bought this from Vinnie Couture in Charlottenburg.
Oh, I haven't been into the shop for a while. I order online. So I necessarily haven't seen this label, but it definitely would have been something that would have appealed to me.
It's interesting because I think even though we can all say, oh, there isn't any trends, there are always trends. And winemakers working with particular grape varieties, and maybe because they've discovered one producer making something in a particular way, it then inspires
them
sort
to
of
do
mass.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm not saying this is a very common style, but definitely in the last 5 years, I've tried much more dry muscat or must get very nice skin contact as well.
Oh, it would probably be really nice because it also adds that little bitterness that contrasts the sort of.
And I was also wondering, and I don't know for this wine, but I was also wondering there could be a little bit of skin contact with this wine. It wouldn't surprise me either,
actually, because it's just that little bit of bite. Yeah, just enough little bite that just has enough of that.
Do you find this similar to anything else you've tried before? Mm. If somebody had not tried a wine like this, just from more from a drinking point of view, a professional drinking point of view, let's be honest. But if you had to pick another grape variety?
Then I'd probably go with...
Would you?
Yeah, maybe. I've had some Rieslings that are bitey and sweet in the same way with enough acidity. Because I think like other things that are as perfumed maybe don't have the same, like, I don't know how else to describe
it. Well, I think it's really nice that you said that, Gwen, because I didn't immediately think of Riesling. This is what's so nice about when we taste together, because we see things really
from different perspectives, yeah.
But I see that because the zestiness, the freshness, the aromatic. I was thinking more Sauvignon.
Yeah, I guess...
Sauvignon with a bit of skin contact, because then you lose some of the herbal notes and you get more of this citrusy, grapefruity thing.
But I think...
And the perfume.
I think maybe that's just about what I've been drinking, because I think in the... Like, Sauvignon is one of those wines that for me was a entry level into interesting whites. So I think I've sort of abandoned the Sauvignon, which is too bad because there are some really great Sauvignon Blancs. But I think for me, when I think about Sauvignon Blanc, it was maybe... something I was drinking a few years ago, and then really just New Zealand Sauvignon. Yeah. And it's going to be something that everyone's having at home, so that maybe less complex than a Sauvignon with some skin contact or something more interesting. Not to bring it back to Gewürztraminer, but I did have a lovely skin contact Gewürztraminer from Rocket Wine recently that tasted like a Negroni. It was really cranberry, orange, and had this bitterness to it that really made you just want to like drink more or eat some food.
I can imagine, as someone who doesn't appreciate the grape in the same way that you
right.
do, but if I was putting myself in your shoes, or just being a bit more open-minded than I am, that's the truth,
yeah.
I would think that with the skin contact, this perception of freshness, because right. when you do have that, and a little bit more bitterness, it could make it a bit more interesting.
It was very interesting, because when I served it to someone, it was really, it's almost like a cocktail in a bottle.
There we go. So the wine that you tried was Lissner.
It's a really...
Dionysus... So Dionysus Capelli. Dionysus, the Greek god of wine, which is a man that apparently originally was a woman but then was depicted as a man.
So very modern.
Gewürztraminer. Interesting. 2017.
Where do we go from here? We're going to move on to Riesling after this.
Yes, I think so.
I'm actually going to down the hatch with this because I quite like it.
Gwen just nicked her wine.
Why not?
What are we pouring, Gwen? Because you bought this wine.
I did. It was in my fridge.
Yep.
I bought it for myself because it must have looked interesting at some point. I'm going to say, it has a TH, but I'm going to say Tannisch.
Yes.
2017. I know that with German wines, lots of words, always happening. So late harvest, dry style.
Let's see the bottle. So we have 2017 Tannisch.
We need pronunciation.
Really? So just coming in here, we've just asked a very good...
We've asked an expert, like we have lifelines. And we've asked an expert.
An expert Austrian chef who obviously is fluent in German because he's Austrian. So we've asked him to pronounce the next wine for us so we don't F it up. Lucas, would you tell us what wine
it's
we're about
fucking
to try?
German and Austrian, man. Like,
sorry, okay.
It's not my people's language.
This is other people's language, but he's better at it than we are. So let's do it. It is...
Lieserer Niederberg Helden.
From Tannisch. That's 2017 from the Mosel in Germany. Thank you so much, Lucas. He will join us on an episode soon, and we'll be treated to some very nice food stories.
Right now he's dog wrangler and he's in charge of trying to keep the pup quiet.
We talked about Mosel Riesling before, obviously on the Riesling episode, didn't we, Gwen?
Yes.
And one of the points that Gwen brought up, which I think everybody kind of responded to, which is a really important
trocken
point.
Trocken is not always trocken.
So, you know, there can be quite a bit of residual sugar left in the grand scheme of things than being drier than sweet. Let's have a little taste and see what we think.
I think it is a pretty classic Riesling. I actually don't know how to describe the smell in wine, so maybe you can help me out. But sometimes there's sort of a mustiness about the smell.
When you say mustiness...
I mean, like...
There's a number of different ways. Musty not in terms of...
Not in a bad way, but in a sort of, like, very top note. There is a muskiness as maybe...
Yeah, but I think... So that's the aromatics. That's the floral element of this grape variety. Totally, Gwen. I agree with you.
I'm not sure how to describe that musk smell. It's not always... You know, when people say floral or aromatic...
But you can say musk, and I think that's perfect for this wine.
Because I think that that's a smell that us lay people don't necessarily always... We ignore it if we're smelling something, because we'll say, like, oh, it smells like X, Y, and Z. But then there's this, like, top note of musk.
You have a very ripe pineapple on your table.
And that actually definitely has the same musk in it. You're right.
And I was sitting next to it for a while, and I kept thinking, my God, that pineapple is... I can smell that pineapple over that everything else. But there is a pineapple note in this particular wine as well.
That's actually a very interesting way to put it, because I think I was always a little bit at a loss of how to describe this muskiness that I smell, especially with Riesling. I think more than other grapes, I smell it more with Riesling.
Obviously, it's not for everybody because it is a little bit of a unique wine or a unique grape variety, because it's a bit of a contradiction, because it is so overblown on the nose. It's so aromatic, so floral. But then when you taste it, it can be quite zesty, mineral, fresh.
Yeah, this one's really quite... I mean, there is some fruitiness to this one.
So we talked a bit about trocken and residual sugar. I don't think residual sugar should be seen as an enemy by any stretch of the mark. The residual sugar in this is 7.75 grams per litre, which is it's not super dry. That's the same level of sugar as an average champagne, for example.
But to be honest, it doesn't taste super sweet. It's in balance.
Because it has such high acidity, we're dealing with a cool climate area where naturally we have very cool evenings. The grapes can rest, and they can build up their acid levels. We have this amazing freshness in the wines. So with this sugar, it's sort of balancing the wines. If we didn't have this residual sugar, the wine would be out of balance.
Absolutely.
That's where I think it's appropriate to have this level of sugar. Absolutely. The same way we have with champagne, and we'll talk about champagne at some point in the future, I'm sure, many times.
I think you're right. And that's what it is. It's a, if there wasn't the acidity that we have here, the sugar would be out of place. Like now it makes you want to drink more of it.
Mm.
You get a little sugar... You have that little dryness on the palate. And just
there's that same sort of waxy, slightly chemical note that you get. Like we talked about it before, and I said Tupperware in the sun.
Yeah, yeah.
This hot plastic, waxy, kerosene thing.
Which isn't unpleasant, don't get anyone wrong. Because actually, this is quite delicious. I'm enjoying it. I mean, so far, we're 2 for 2. I like both of them.
Mm.
Super different. How would you say they're different? Like, how would you... I mean, they're both aromatics, but completely different, I think.
So for me, I think trying them side by side, both very aromatic on the nose, obviously, because we're trying aromatic wines. The Muscat, sort of more in this sort of blossom, fresh. On the nose, it's got a very different profile. It's more sort of grapey, more of this floral character, almost orange blossom. Then when we go to the Riesling, we're tasting more sort of like apple, pear, citrus, less of the grapefruit that you see in the Muscat, and more of this sort of like apple blossom.
A little cleaner, almost
like peach.
And lemon.
Waxy, kerosene, camping stove, gas, which sounds
awful,
not so...
But actually it's quite delicious because it does...
But like what we said before, sweet and sour, like fruit and savoury, and it's like that contrast between something that's appealing and not appealing that makes it interesting. Like perfume, when perfumers with the off notes that lift the higher notes.
I mean, one of my favourite quotes of all time is Baudelaire saying that everything beautiful needs an element of unusual to make it beautiful. You know, when something is too perfect... It's never beautiful because there's no interest to it. You have to have something a little something to strike the chord. One of my favorite quotes. So I actually think that this would also pair great with sweet and sour pork, but I think this one would maybe have a wider range of uses for food.
Because we have that level of residual sugar, despite it saying trocken.
Right.
With this particular wine, anything with some spice, Thai food.
Great, yeah.
Something with fish sauce, lemongrass, ginger, garlic, chili. Something very, very fresh. I think obviously Szechuan would work very nicely as well.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of like Thai food, because Thai food has this
aromatic.
Sweet and savory, salty, fat sometimes with the meat. And I think with those elements, kind of encapsulates what Riesling is all about.
Because I think that Rieslings are very well paired with food and easy to pair with food.
Mm, I agree.
Because I think they're very food friendly.
Yeah.
Well, I think
even with like a schnitzel.
Cut through the fat.
Totally.
Let's keep it real.
Chicken fingers.
What is a chicken finger? It's like a chicken nugget.
It's a tiny schnitzel. Yeah, it's a finger of chicken, breaded.
Instead of a fish finger, it's with chicken.
I'm going to say both of these wines pair deliciously with chicken nuggets and sweet and sour sauce.
Prawn crackers and sweet and sour sauce that are left over from your Chinese takeaway.
Oh my god, I love it.
And fish fingers.
No idea. Also or chicken.
No, in England they know. In England they say, what is it? It's not. It's chicken goujon, they say. And I'm like, why do they call them goujons? They're just the same as a fish finger, but they've got chicken inside.
It's a finger. So the next one is Viognier.
So we're trying the 2016 Viognier from Oliver Zetter.
Oliver Zetter Viognier, 2016.
From Fouts.
From Fouts. Lovely. A region that, actually, I think we've actually covered.
I think, well, we haven't covered it in so much detail, but we talked about Fouts, and Fouts being one of the sort of flatter, hotter regions, which makes sense if you were having Viognier from Germany. Of course, Fouts would be the region that you might think of first. But I've not come across this wine before, so happy to be open to it. So I'm going to have a little bit of a smell.
Not sure where I got it. It has a little bit, right now I'm going to say, yeah, it's a bit tight. It's got a little bit of a...
The nose is a bit closed, you're not getting too much aroma.
There is that pineapple-y mustiness again, but it's very closed. Like, you feel like it's got more to offer at some point.
I find there is still something that's representative of Viognier. It still has this little peachy aroma to it, which is nice.
For me, salty. I don't know why I always think of Viognier as being salty.
Maybe you've been drinking really good Viognier from the Rhone, where it is quite mineral.
I always want to drink this with, like, fatty fish.
Lovely, like codchi.
Like really, like, fat fish. You just want to, like, because that saltiness, like, matches it. But then there's enough acidity to cut through. That's what it makes
even something creamy.
Yes, because it has enough acidity to cut through any fattiness.
Maybe not the most exciting example of Viognier. I still think it represents the grape. It still has some peachiness, this slightly floral, blossomy note that you see, but not too overblown. And it still has nice freshness, like creamy, and it's round. For people that maybe like Chardonnay, that want something that's a bit fruitier and a bit easier, maybe they go towards this. But what's the alcohol level? Do we know?
This one is 13.5.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Yeah. There are a few grape varieties that have this. Also from the Rhone, Marsan and Roussan. Yeah. They have a little bit of a texture to them that's different to other grape varieties. And I think Viognier in particular, when it can be really ripe, you can have this slight oiliness. You see this a little bit in this wine today.
Yeah.
There's a viscosity and there's a texture that's different. For people that maybe drink Pinot Grigio or have tried Pinot Grigio or Picpoul, for example, maybe they're too fresh for them.
Yeah, because I would think those both of those are quite thin.
That's what I'm saying.
They're very thin.
I think those particular wines are for a certain type of person. Or, you know, if you tried those wines and you thought, oh, God, they're too thin or they're too fresh.
Right.
You know, looking for something like Chardonnay or Viognier where there is more depth of concentration, of flavour, of richness, viscosity that you see in the wine.
Because I would say that for myself, I think Viognier is something that no one had ever talked about. This was something that I found, you know, years ago on a shelf, just going, oh, I've never heard of that before. Took it home, found it really interesting. And definitely something that I went back to a lot when I first discovered it because I didn't quite understand it. But I was buying bottles of it just to see what was going on. Yourself? You buy a lot of Viognier?
I don't. I was at a tasting at the French Embassy, so I was trying a lot of French wine. And I tried quite a few, either Viognier or Viognier blend. And I tried some Condrieu, which is 100% Viognier. Right. And I have to say, they were amazing wines. When they're made well, a lot of integrity to them. And for wine professionals, I think often Viognier gets sort of put on the side as not so much of a serious grape variety. It's kind of one of those things that salt and peppers your list. It's not like Chardonnay, it's not like Sauvignon, it's not like Riesling.
But I actually think it could, I think it could stand up to some Chardonnays. I think if you are, like, I love Meursault, and I think right now there's like a little bit of a creaminess and a butteriness to this that I think if I was in the mood for a Meursault and I didn't want to spend the money, this is potentially something.
Yeah, something with the right amount of body and this fruit.
It's got some, bam bam to it without being super expensive or super over the top. You can drink this without food, although I think
with some spice it's quite nice. As long as I didn't mean to make that wrong. That sounded so tacky, didn't it? With some spice it's quite nice. I haven't been paid
with some spice it's quite nice.
Ay, ay, ay.
Oh, God.
But I think that Viognier, this one that we're having right now, although it would go, if you were a really classic wine drinker, it could go well with poultry, cream sauces, some like lighter meat.
Yeah.
Also creamy. There's enough acidity. There's a little bit of fruit. But I think you could do more classic dishes with this. So out of these three, if you had to pick one to take home, what would be your pick?
It's like being on a night out if you're a single person.
All right, then let me amend the question.
Which one of your kids do you like the most?
No.
Yeah.
What's your pick for dinner?
I don't mean that in the date context. No. Before, that sounds a bit weird.
What's your pick for dinner and what's your pick for a session?
Session drink would be Muscat Love because it's light and fresh and zesty. And if I'm drinking something over and over, I want something that's easy and clean.
I think I'm going to agree with you on that.
And not something that's going to make me feel tired. Riesling with spicy food, if I was going anywhere oriental, spicy, Indian, for example, yeah, that would be great.
Great.
Viognier, tagine.
Oh, yeah. You and tagines, I know. You love a tagine.
I feel the same way about tagine as you feel about gewürztraminer.
I know.
And actually, maybe we need to bring the two together more often.
I think we have once, but I think we need to actually do it for the podcast.
Yeah, we should, yeah. Did like a lamb tagine with apricots and stuff
like
that.
Yes, it could be amazing brilliant. With gewürztraminer.
And I also think with viognier, that could be very nice.
Yeah, cool.
So that's being a politician without actually giving you a decisive answer on one option. I've given you all the options with different reasons behind. So what about you, Gwen?
I'm gonna agree with you. I would absolutely drink Muscat Love in a session, happily by myself or with friends. And yeah, it's a little bit of a hard toss-up between the Riesling and the Viognier because they both bring something different. I love Riesling. We drink a lot of Riesling at home. We would love to hear what your picks are for aromatics. Like, what are your favorite aromatics? What do you love to drink them with? What do you love to eat when you're drinking aromatics? What were your biggest surprises in terms of aromatics? And we'll post everything on the Instagram, which is juice.podcast. We would like you to also visit juice.show, which is our website, which even though it's very simple, we have totes for sale. And we hope you join us next week for our next episode.
Ciao. Cheers until next week.
Cheers.